Support for Church Folks comes from Tide Travels, more than just your average travel site. With three levels to save, you have the opportunity to build great and multiple incentives, earning yourself points to be used wherever you please. Not only that, you are also building points to reward deserving kids a chance to explore the world, showing them much more than they can see every day. Also, for the month of July, if you are interested in becoming an agent yourself, you will receive a $500 cruise voucher, offer good through July 31st. So before you book that getaway, contact Talisha Ross at www.myvortex365.com/Tide Travels. Again, that's www.myvortex365.com/TY Travels, or hit her up on Facebook at Tide Travels. Exploring the world for less.
Turn to your neighbor and slap your neighbor a high five and say, neighbor, oh neighbor, it's Church Folks. What's good? This is Derek J. Murphy, and I am a pastor, teacher, speaker, writer, musician, worship leader, all-around Renaissance man. And today, I am not joined by Whit Rose from around the way. She's out there doing the Lord's work, teaching in Vacation Bible School. So kudos to her for dealing with our children at Vacation Bible School. Send her your love and your prayers as she's teaching. But today I'm joined by my beautiful and lovely and wonderful, vivacious, great and wonderful, she's giving me a face, wife, Angela. Say hello.
Hello.
I'm really excited about today's show, and I'm glad to have Angela here with me today. If you have been listening to Church Folks the last couple of weeks, please shout us out on Facebook or Instagram. Let us know where you're listening from, how you're listening to us, what stations, or if you're listening by podcast. I'd also like to let you know that these shows are available for extended episodes on our podcast, on iTunes, on Google Music, on Stitcher, just about anywhere you get your podcast. So if you want a little bit more than what we're giving you on air, check us out on the podcast and subscribe and make sure to give us a 5-star rating. But before we get to our interview, there's some stuff that's been happening. While we were on vacation, my wife was listening to 444, and it ain't none of your business why.
Well.
And so I wanted to talk a little bit about 444. What's your thoughts on Jay-Z's album? I haven't listened that much to it, but what's your thoughts on it?
I thought it was very informative, very transparent. A lot of times it's hard for us to muster up transparency because it comes with a bit of judgment. But it was very, very transparent, and I liked it.
Well, I know that, you know, church folks all around the world have been a little put out with the Clark Sisters for being featured on, I think, what was it, Family Feud? I think it was Family Feud. And I thought, now I did listen to that song, and I thought the feature was a good thing, and a good deal. But there's been a lot of debate about it. How do you feel about it?
Get your money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that if artists aren't allowed to be artistic, and then get paid for it, then what's the point of them doing the art?
Right.
Marvin Sapp's response to it made a whole lot of sense to me. He was saying that, you know, no matter what the secular artists do or how they live their lifestyles, the fans are responsive to the music and they buy the music. And we just don't have that happening in gospel music. That he mentioned, I think it was James Fortune was number one on the gospel charts, but he only sold 3,000 records. And I just don't see why is it that church folks aren't supporting the music that's supposed to be for us.
Right. I totally agree. And to what Marvin Sepp said was that, you know, we hold gospel artists to a higher standard, which makes us put the messenger above the message. And the most important thing is the message of Jesus Christ. I do think there should be some accountability to those who are performing the music. But again, they're artists. You don't expect your brother to be perfect, and you allow him grace. And we should do the same with the artists, just like we give the secular artists grace to do whatever, and we still listen and buy their music.
Well, what comes to mind for me is this whole thing this week with R. Kelly, all that stuff that he's dealing with. This ain't the first time that R. Kelly has been in trouble for sex crimes, so to speak. And yet we still buy his music. We still listen in the 12 play. Well, maybe we don't listen to 12
play. Right.
But, you know, we still buy his music. We still support his concerts. And, I mean, he is a touring artist. And we're still buying it. And I think that's really unfair, like Marvin Sapp said, to try to give a standard to the gospel artist that is... that doesn't allow them to be artistic in their expression.
Right. I think what was most compelling to me is I had even forgot about it. It was an interview that R. Kelly did, and someone asked him if he liked teenage girls, and he said, define teenage. yet we still show up to the concert. And when I say we, I don't mean we, but we go to the concert. You still are wiping sweat off his face if you can get close enough to it. Yet you won't go and pay $25 to hear your local gospel artist because right. They ought to be doing it for free because it's for Jesus.
It's for Jesus.
And that's just not fair.
And I'm not mad at the Clark Sisters. Like you said, get your money. And, you know, who knows that whatever people are hearing of the Clark Sisters may cause them to go and listen to their music, and there might be a life change behind it.
Right. And I think, at least for me, that's what it happens a lot. I'll hear somebody featured and then I go to see what else they've done, and you don't know what kind of message that person may receive just by, well, let me see who the Clark Sisters are. Let me see who Kim Burrell is, because she was also featured on the album as well.
Well, you know, it's not like Twinkie was cussing.
Right.
I can't imagine Twinkie cussing on that organ stool or not. But anyway... let's take a listen to our sponsors before we get to the interview. This episode of Church Folks is supported by my latest book, Rewriting Murphy's Law. In a world where bad news is ever present and we're tempted to lean into that negativity, Rewriting Murphy's Law will help you rewrite your own narrative, because everything doesn't have to go wrong. In this collection of essays, I take you through 6 topics, including emotions, questions, and destiny, to help you see God's goodness in your own story. It's an easy read, and I'm sure that it'll bless you. So order your copy today anywhere you buy books online, or visit derekjmurphy.com/books. Again, that's derekjmurphy.com/books. Inspiration, motivation, encouragement, building people. If you have a business, brand, ministry, product, or event that you would like to be promoted on this show, contact us at churchfolksshow@gmail.com. Again, that's churchfolksshow@gmail.com. We have on-air and digital packages available, and rates are extremely low for this first season, so take advantage of that and contact us today, again, at churchfolksshow@gmail.com for more information. On today's episode, you get to listen in on a conversation that my wife and I had with master stylist Marquita Pruitt from the Houston area. And we talk about hair, even though I have none, and business, and branding. We even get to talk about food a little bit, and how much our ministries can come out of our passions and the things that we love, even when it doesn't have to do with church. So I believe all of us can get something out of the conversation that we had. So take a listen to Marquita Pruitt. joined today by our very, very special guest, Marquita Pruitt. She is a master stylist from the Houston area. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
The first question that I'm going to ask you is the same question we ask all of our guests at the very beginning of the interview. What worship song, gospel song does it for you? What song takes you in every time?
Oh, wow. What song takes me in? Shekinah Glory Ministries, yes.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the song of the song, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just the surrender in the song that just, yeah, takes me right on in.
Is it really the content of the song, or is it how people sing it? Is it, or is it just a personal thing for you?
It's kind of personal, and it's the people who's actually singing it. One thing that I love the most about Shekinah Glory Ministry is that, you know, usually most of their recordings are live, and so on their albums, you can actually hear like some of the imperfections,
mm-hmm.
but the imperfections make it realistic and more relatable. So for me, is the people who's singing it, the fact that it makes you be able to connect to it easier.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that album came out, I believe it was like in 2006, and it was one of my transformation. That was like my transformation year. Mm-hmm. And so that album actually kind of carried me through into my surrender, into when I started walking into my purpose.
Okay, very good. I, as a musician, I kind of hate that song because I'm just playing the same thing over and over again.
It's so repetitive. It is.
It's so repetitive, and there's no real way to jazz it up. It's
no
real way to flip it or make it a little more interesting for the musician. But from a worshiping standpoint, yeah, that drive of saying yes is really, really good,
right.
for the listener, and I can appreciate it for that point, and probably that point only.
Well, I'm a worshiper at heart, so I'm always down for like just pure worship music. So, yeah, it is pretty basic though.
Now, you mentioned 2006 was the year that you walked into your purpose. Is that the year that you decided to become a stylist?
That is actually, I graduated in 2006 from cosmetology school. And so that's when I decided, that's actually when I kind of stumbled upon my purpose as far as business wise, as far as what my career was, as far as being a hairstylist, and how I was going to implement my calling of ministry into that as well.
How did you come about going to cosmetology school? How did you choose that path?
So I started doing hair when I was about 13 years old. I was like the neighborhood hairstylist. My friends, their moms, and some of them I service still to this day. Of course, you know, our parents didn't take us to the hair salon. So I pretty much started doing my hair when I was a kid. My mother gave me a jerry curl. I hated it. And so I decided that I was going to get rid of it because I was tired of being teased. So I relaxed it. And when I relaxed it, I know a lot of people are like, your hair didn't fall out? No, my hair didn't fall out. But when I made the decision to change my hair, my mom was like, oh, so you're doing your hair now? Okay, well, then you're doing your hair. So I started doing my own hair at that time. So from that, it just kind of elevated, you know, just kind of evolved. And so I started doing it when I was about 13. And it was just something that I always loved to do. I went to school. I worked in corporate America out of high school. And I went to college, too. My major was psychology. And I ended up getting laid off. And I went a long period of not working. So I fell back on doing hair. And so every time I would get laid off, I fell back on doing hair.
Mm-hmm.
So I got tired of putting my fate, so to speak, in someone else's hand. And I just decided, I keep falling back on this. Let me just pursue it. It was something that I always loved anyways, but my mom was always like, you're too smart. You shouldn't be doing that. You should be doing something more. And so once I got married, I just decided I can follow my own and go to school. So I filed and decided to pursue that.
Now, what's the definition, because I know a lot of people throw it around a lot, of a master stylist? Because, you know, there are people who say they're masters and maybe should not be calling themselves master. That.
Was that shade?
Well, that was a shade towards anyone.
So my understanding of a master stylist is someone who is skilled in all areas of cosmetology, as well as knowledgeable on the anatomy of the hair, and actually can master every type and texture of hair. And then on top of that, I believe that as being a master stylist, tenure, time in, contributes as well. I see a lot of people who get straight out of beauty school and just think because they're good at something that they're a master stylist, and it's like, baby, you cry before you walk.
Right. You know? How important is it, do you think, that young stylists, you know, fresh out of cosmetology school, find a mentor stylist or, you know, somebody to kind of shadow under? I know I kind of just kind of fell up under your wing. And
now, for those of you who don't really know what's happening right here, my wife has just completed cosmetology school and has gone into business for herself. And you know, Naturally Sweet, started out there. She and Marquita met through the natural hair community, and so that's what's happening here. We're seeing the master and the apprentice interact. Okay, you can go ahead. I'm sorry.
So you asked how important. So the issue is, I myself find it very important. I mean, you know, any stylist that I can help evolve into the best version of themselves is a blessing to me, to be able to help that person. Do you see it much in the industry now? No, you don't. But I believe it's super important that as a new stylist, you find someone who is willing to devote that type of time and that type of that impartation of knowledge to that person. I think it's very important, and it's a necessity. But in this industry, being such a dog-eat-dog kind of industry, it's kind of hard to actually find someone who will actually take that time to take someone under their wing and do it.
Right. And, you know, that's what I have discovered, that there's not everybody who's willing to share the information just for, you know, informational purposes. You know, when I met you, you know, you were styling at an event, and I just happened to, you know, I didn't even know you, follow you on social media or anything, and you just happened to be working the heck out of some hair. And, you know, I asked a couple questions, and then you posted that you were looking for an apprentice for those particular, or an assistant, I think is the way we put it, for those particular events. And, you know, I was more than willing to come and to just assist in whatever way I could. And, you know, I think people thought it was going to be something else. But, you know, I was happy to sweep up hair that you were cutting, or to check people out, just to be able to get that kind of information and get that kind of knowledge. And I don't think that's what people really want to do these days. They want to be mentored, but from a position of, I already know.
Right, exactly. They want to come out as if, you know, I remember having, and not to pull names or throw names, but I remember having a young lady a couple years ago, and she was fresh out of school, and her biggest thing was, when I'm going to start making $3,000. And I'm like, you're not even styling three people a day.
Right.
You kind of need to build first before you get there. And so many people, they want to just get out and be on top. And I don't know if that's a generational thing or what, but most people don't want to really just labor and put in the work to build that brand and to get to that level. But, you know, I was just honored to even have you just be there, because at that time, and that's why I was, you know, kind of open, like, if you want to take videos or just asking questions, whatever the case may be, because I was just honored that you volunteered your time like that.
Right. Well, you know, it's important to me, the quality. You know, and for me, it's not about getting a bunch of heads in, but it's about you know, the quality of the hairstyle.
Right, absolutely.
And that, you know, that's what I learned from you, because you were literally doing people's hair, and a month later they were coming back and was like, I kept that in the entire month, and that updo was banging, right. You know what I mean? And so that was what was so important to me. And you talked about the importance of branding. Talk about your brand.
So I started with Touch of Heaven Salon is my salon brand, or my brand. I don't even know what you want to call it, but it is my salon. Baby. It's what I started. This is where I started, which was Touch of Heaven Salon. It was a name that was given to me, I believe, by God in 2006 when I started. And just from that name, it was just a reflection of who I am. So my brand, it just kind of took off really fast. But in branding, my goal was to set myself apart from the typical stylists. And so, you know, you get a lot of women who, especially African-American women, who are upset with or conditioned to sit in the salon 5-6 hours a day.
Yes,
and,
yes.
You know, just all those different, you know, salon, black salon stereotypes. And so my goal in my branding was to set myself apart and not participate in those stereotypes. And I believe that, aside from my beliefs, is what catapulted my brand, to be honest. I always tell people I believe I'm good at what I do, but I just think it's the consistency in my business and my beliefs that kind of pushes that forward.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, part of being a master stylist is the knowledge of the anatomy of hair and how important that is for you to know and be able to do different styles, different textures, and all those different things. And you also mentioned before that your mom kind of had this idea that you were too smart to be doing hair.
When, right.
In all actuality, it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like in order to do hair well and to keep hair healthy, there has to be some level of technical knowledge and knowledge of anatomy. And were you ever able to convince your family, those who may have been naysayers of you going into cosmetology, of how important those things were?
Oh, absolutely. Let me see. So, of course, you know, whenever we go to school, we take anatomy and physiology and different things like that, science and all those different things that contribute to the structure of the hair, and just to be able to diagnose diseases on site and all those different things. Mm-hmm. And so when people hear that we actually had to take those courses just to do hair, they're like, really? So I guess that what most people think, that, you know, most stylists aren't very smart. So that was kind of what my mother thought, like, you're just doing hair. There's really not a lot of brain work that goes into it. So as time progressed, as I positioned myself in the market and began to grow my clientele consistently year in and year out, and then just being able to sustain myself, that's when they started noticing, like, okay, wait a minute. She may be on to something. You know, I would have to tell them, you know, the research that went into it. I actually just had that conversation the other day with a customer about the research that went into, you know, deciding and finally deciding to go into the industry and everything else, and just knowing that it's a multi-billion-dollar industry just amongst the African-American culture. So just knowing that we spend that kind of money, it's a good industry to be in. There's ways to make money, and it takes a lot of smart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it takes a lot of knowledge to get into it and to grow year in and year out. You know, when I entered, I was, you know, 2009 was the quote unquote recession. And I saw a lot of stylists fall by the wayside during that time. And so it took a lot of smarts and education to sustain through those periods and to still be on top. So, I mean, I was able to prove to them. Eventually, you know, it took a little minute for them to see, but once they started paying attention to what was going on, they were like, okay, no, she's on to something.
Well, and not only, you know, and you mentioned it, not only being knowledgeable in the techniques and the anatomy and all of that things, you had to be well versed in business in order to run your business. And I think in the African American community,
absolutely,
we don't necessarily consider stylists to be entrepreneurs. We don't necessarily consider them to be business owners, because we just see it as a hobby, and we tend to pay people as if it's just a hobby and not a profession that you actually have to have some sense in, you know.
Right. And I think, too, I guess playing devil's advocate, I think a little bit of us kind of make that the thought process as well, because we do have so many stylists, because it was a hobby or because they could slay their own hair, they went into the industry to you know, try and make it something, but they don't have the knowledge of business behind it to help them sustain. And that's why they find themselves just kind of teetering in the water, you know, not really going, you know, left or right, up or down. It's just, they're just kind of stagnant, and it's because they don't have that knowledge of the business aspect of it.
You have really seemed to set yourself apart from the rest, and you stand out in such a great way. And I think, from my perspective, because I have no hair, from my perspective, I think that one of the reasons that you stand out so much, and you mentioned it before, the way that you have married your profession and your business to ministry. Can you talk about how you did that?
Yes. So when I was in cosmetology school, I remember, for one, I was the only African-American girl in my class. And I remember we had to do a business module, basically construct our business plan, what we desired or what we wanted to have when we graduated. Where do we see ourselves? And so we had to come up with like the business name and the business structure, how we wanted, you know, the vision and the, you know, and all those different things. And so I remember being in class and saying that I wanted a Christian-based salon. And, you know, I got saved at a very early age. And so not that I've been perfect, Lord knows I have not been perfect my whole life, but it has always been that foundation. And so I felt that being that I started doing hair at such a young age, it was just a gift that God had given me. And so in making that transition, which I talked about that transformation, that transitional year 2006. So in making that decision to go into hair, I vowed that I would offer it back to him as almost like a form of worship, which is why I work really hard to make sure every style is perfected, at least to the best of my ability. And so I kind of married those two together, because this is my gift. And because that is my foundation, I kind of brought them in together. So God kind of showed me that my business would be my ministry. And so what he's done, everyone, almost everyone who sits in my chair needs something from me. And so a lot of times when they sit in my chair, sometimes I'm quiet when I first meet them, because my goal is to just try to hear from, you know, the Holy Spirit to see what it is that I'm supposed to impart to them, or whatever the case may be. Or it could just be, you know, simple prayer, or just providing a simple service. It whatever the case may be, it could be a surface thing where they may not feel great about themselves, and that I'm just providing them that confidence, allowing them to know that they are wonderfully and beautifully made in Christ, you know, or whatever the case may be. So I just kind of allow God to kind of flow through me in my business. It's not like a Bible thumping thing where, you know, I'm constantly just throwing out scriptures, whatever the case may be. It's just me utilizing my life's experiences to allow people, I guess maybe like a transparency, just being transparent and allowing my life's experiences to maybe be a testimony to someone else and help uplift them in some type of way. And if I know that they walked away feeling better than they said, then I feel like my job is done.
I think that, you know, sometimes, and not in all cases, but sometimes, you know, we miss opportunities in the salon setting, because it is a, like you said, it's a place of vulnerability, and it's a place where people have a tendency to open up and to talk, and then that time gets wasted, you know, in gossip or, you know, other things like that. And so, you know, I found the same thing, that, you know, it's just in conversation, you know, it kind of just comes out. And right. so, you know, I always leave feeling better when my clients leave because we've had right. this uplifting conversation. And like you said, it's not Bible thumping. It's not beating you mm-hmm. over the head with the Bible, you know, no. but it's an encouraging situation. Whereas, you know, I've gone to the beauty shop before and I found out about everybody's everything. And it's like, mm-hmm. I didn't want to hear that. I didn't want to know that.
Right. Walk away feeling heavy because you know everybody's right. trash.
Right. right. And then, you know, and then people will try to pry and get into your business. And then, you know, right. you're the one who's just sitting there being quiet. And it's like, oh, what's wrong with you? Are you stuck up? You know what I mean? And so I right. think it's a lot of time that gets wasted because we do have that opportunity to pour into people and, you know, just to minister to people on a different level. Because, you know, if you're... You know, our hair is our glory. And so if I'm letting right. you touch my hair, because I don't let anybody touch my hair. Right. So if I'm letting you touch my hair, then I'm putting you. No, he does not. I'm putting you in a vulnerable, I'm putting myself in a vulnerable place.
A vulnerable place.
Right. You know, so.
But for the both of you, this is really a conscious decision that you made to be uplifting in your business. And so this is not just something haphazard. This is part of your plan, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And now, that's not to say that, you know, it's not to say that that's every day, because, like you said, it's a conscious decision. But some days, you know, the client comes in and they start off and gossip, and it's kind of hard to switch that. I may get quiet, or I'm not going to say I may indulge, but we may get to talking politics or whatever the case may be. So the conversation may stray. That may not always be the case, but in most cases, that is definitely that you wake up every day saying, okay, God, what you got for me today? What do you need me to do today? So, yeah.
How did your instructors respond to that being part of your business plan?
They told me it wouldn't last. They told me it wouldn't work. They, you know, of course, you know, being politically correct, the one thing that they tell you is you never mix business and you never mix business, politics, and religion. Right. And so, of course, you know, going by that statement, I was told it wouldn't work. It was a unanimous vote. Like, yeah, you shouldn't. That's not going to work. But in the back of my mind, I was like, apparently for you to say that, you must don't know my God. So I did it anyway.
Yeah. And look where it's gotten you. Yeah. It's
absolutely. Yeah. I wouldn't trade it for nothing.
I would think that has been more of a draw for you than it has been a hindrance. I mean, I can imagine some people possibly being, I don't want to use the word turned off, but just not feeling the positive vibe when they're used to a certain vibe in the salon setting.
Right.
I can only imagine that there are only more people that are more drawn to that positive vibe that you are bringing to the salon. Not to mention that, okay, and I see this in Angela's business model and the way that she operates. You know, you don't stack clients. When I used to go to the... When I used to go to the beauty shop with my mom, it'd be a whole lot of people in there and everybody would be talking.
Yeah.
And the way you all seem to have your business model, you are pretty much alone with your client. And yes. you have that time to, you know, it's more private, it's more intimate, mm-hmm. and you can really kind of speak more directly to that person as opposed to this energy that's everywhere.
Right. And it allows for, because even when I take other styles under my wing, the one thing that I tell them is that you're not just providing a service, you are delivering an experience. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that one-on-one allows for a more personable experience. And then that person feels more comfortable to opening up. And, you know, that's how you build those relationships. And it's like, once you build that relationship with your stylist, it's pretty hard to go somewhere else. So, you just want to make sure. I mean, I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way. I've had, my first salon was an open concept salon. And I remember being able to see, just kind of like an out of body experience, seeing how my clients kind of drew back because it was an open concept. Not that there was gossip and different things going on, but it was just that it was an open concept. Everybody was in one large room. And so it just kind of you know, allowed other people to hear if we were talking. So they weren't so comfortable to sharing their personal life, you know, issues or tragedies or whatever the case may be. So that's why I went back to a Sweet Concept, because it just allowed for that more personal, intimate connection with the customer.
Well, and I think it also allows you to set the atmosphere.
Yes.
When you have a, you know, your own suite type situation. Because, mm-hmm. you know, at least at ours, you know, I'm usually there by myself most of the time. And so, you know, I have the music that I want going. You know, and if everybody else is there, you know, I can easily shut my door and and be good and not have to be in your conversation and in those type things. So,
right. And I also feel people, I have anxiety, so I don't like being around a whole lot of people at one time. So this small suite, it works perfectly for me, because, well, see, you know, and I don't like a whole lot of people looking at me at once.
And I don't have the anxiety of being around a lot of people because I don't mind it. I do have the anxiety of you being in my conversation. Like, yeah. if I'm talking to someone and then you jump in the right. conversation, I'm offended. Because, like, why did you jump in this conversation? What made right. you think I was talking to you? So exactly. that's what, and, you know, if your client is, you know, trying to, you know, tell you something personal and then somebody overhears it and then they have to put in their two cents and that kind of stuff, it's just, I just don't like it.
Right.
Now, with the ministry that you offer during the styling session, that's really informal. Do you do anything that's more formal as far as ministry is concerned? Or have you?
Formal in what degree? Like, what do you mean? Like, events or?
Yeah, events, classes, do you squall? So, do you preach?
Well, yes, kind of, a little bit of all of it. So, if by chance, it depends on, so this is what I really like about the whole thing. Whenever I minister, God gives it to me in a way that it is palatable to the person. So my church going clients, I may actually be preaching and speaking a word truly to them, where it does kind of come across as preaching. My clients who may not necessarily go to church or are not an organized religion type person, then it just comes fluidly, like just sharing of a testimony or whatever. It comes across as more uplifting. And then, of course, on the side, I do events and different things like that where I may be speaking and sharing a word. It just depends. So it just depends on the environment or the atmosphere and what that need is in that moment, is how the delivery comes across.
Well, tell us more about your events.
So when I first started, I actually had an event. It was so funny because I saw a flyer the other day. Those doggone Facebook memories. I saw a flyer for one of my first events, and it was actually called Trichology and Theology Seminar. And so we had like a split setting where the first part of the event was catered to hair, and we talked about, you know, the structure of the hair and what products to use, and, you know, just kind of poured out that information. And then the second part, we would have a guest speaker who would come in and uplift the women and give an encouraging word, and we'd eat and all those different things. So from that initial event, I've done like prayer breakfasts. I've held like prayer breakfasts. Last year, I started doing events actually out of my home that got put on pause. But we were doing where every quarter or so we would get together and just whatever God kind of gave me as a message, I would share. And then this year, I decided to start doing it at least once a year, because the original vision was a once a year ministry event. And so this year, I have one coming up in October, which is diamonds and denim. And so it's God has given me a message that he gave it to me like earlier this year, and it's like just waiting with expectancy. I don't know about Angela, but just in talking to my clients, it's a unanimous season right now where I've come across so many women that seem to be like in a period of waiting. You know, they know that their blessing or their harvest is coming. And so, you know, God kind of gave me a word to just kind of give them encouragement. In the salon, that's pretty much every day, what I've been doing like since December of last year has been just speaking encouragement and, you know, just whatever, you know, wisdom that God may impart to me to share is what I've been doing. And so just to host an event where we can all get together socially and just to kind of know, usually the events are just to show that you're not alone, okay, really. And so that's pretty much why, even though I've been speaking that message to everyone and they kind of know, it's just to kind of socially get together and know that you're just not alone, which is in itself is uplifting. So, right. Yeah, that's pretty much the basis of the event, is just to kind of speak to that season of waiting and to let them know, even after you wait and your season of harvest come, there's still work that needs to be done, which is what a lot of us fail to realize, is that that season of harvest is actually the hardest season because you have to put in the most work. So just to kind of speak to those different areas.
All right, that's two things I want to do. One, I want to go in the direction of talking specifically about hair, and I think we have mm-hmm. been for the last 30 minutes or so, mm-hmm. but specifically about the natural hair movement, and I think that's how you and Angela got connected. Mm-hmm. This is how Angela got interested in doing cosmetology, because she was interested in learning about the natural textures and hair and for her own hair and for doing mm-hmm. her children's hair, because it has nothing to do with my head. What advice could you offer those that may be looking to transition to their or returning to their natural hair? And that's for Angela too.
Angela, you want to go first? Or
no, I'm going to yield to the expert.
Oh, Jesus.
Me first. Well, the first thing I would say in returning to your natural is find an expert that can assist you in this transition. It's too many stylists out there that, you know, may say that they know, but do your research and find someone who really knows about the structure of the hair. And their work shows that they keep up with the integrity of the strands of the hair. Find someone. And I don't want to sound mean, but no, stay off YouTube.
There you go. Say it.
That's a good one.
If you're going to use YouTube, because I just have to speak to that because so many people use it. If you're going to use YouTube or social media to help you in your transition, find someone who has hair like you.
Right.
Don't find someone who have a different texture, because one, it's going to make you not appreciate what you have, and two, what they can do is going to be unrealistic for you. So those are the two things I would say. Find an expert and find a YouTuber who has hair like you.
I would say just patience. You know, people want to transition and you think it's a quick thing, and transitioning mm-hmm. is absolutely not quick. You're talking about a year and yeah. a half, maybe 2 years mm-hmm. of transitioning. And so it's like, well, I want to wear these styles, but I don't want to cut my hair. And right. so with the transition comes a lot of patience. I didn't have the patience, which is why I cut all my hair off.
Yeah, me too.
And so, you know, really patience. And then, like you said, you know, embracing what you have. So many people want to have somebody else's hair. You have that mm-hmm. hair envy. And like you said, you get on YouTube and you look at people that know you don't have hair like that. You know you got kinky hair and that person has wavy, loose curls. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, embrace what you have. That's right. coming out of your head, because that's your hair.
And right. And having the stylist to understand what's coming out of your head to keep mm-hmm. it healthy, to keep it, you know, I think y'all used, what's the word, curl patterns?
Oh,
is that okay. Is that correct?
That's a word, yes.
To maintain, that's a word, oh. To maintain your curl patterns and all of these things. But I think it's important that people understand all that goes into it, because I was under the impression that it would be less work when my wife decided that she was going to transition, and then it's really turned into a career by happenstance. But you know, taking the time to know what you're dealing with and to know who you're dealing with is very important. And I think that our listeners need to know that, because so many people, like Angela said, think that it's a quick fix and that you can get things done the way you want it. And that just may not be the way it'll happen for you, because your texture may not be the same of what you've been seeing. And I think people just need to know from the experts, from the experts, how to approach it. Instead of just, you know, making a decision on the fly.
Right. And then, too, even with having an expert, some textures can transition easier than others. So depending on your texture of hair, your transitioning phase may require protective styling and just different things. You may have to deep condition more often, or you may have to, you know, I always tell my clients the transitioning phase is contingent upon your hair type. If you have looser texture or finer texture, sometimes it can be a little bit easier. If it's coarser, because that hair that's been relaxed for so long is a little bit, it's been compromised, it's not as strong as your new growth, so it can easily snap in the transitioning phase. So that's why I suggest having an expert, because a lot of people don't know about, because everybody, the people who've returned, they know about that line of demarcation and how that hair tangles at that mark. And so that in itself is a war. So find somebody that can help you.
Right. And I think that, you know, something that the natural hair community did, I think it kind of took for granted the need for a stylist, because everybody came in thinking that, you know, I could just do this myself. Right. Oh, and I mean, I didn't, my stylist told me when I told her I was transitioning, she said, now look, I don't do natural hair. And I appreciated her being honest with me, because I didn't want my hair jacked up. And so I did my hair. And as I learned more about my hair, I didn't have a problem doing my own hair, but I still would, you know, talk to stylists, find out those things, because there is a science behind your hair. And so, you know, just, and I know people get on YouTube and they think that they're the experts now, but they're, you know, we've gone to school to learn what to do when your scalp is, you know, super contaminated with all this stuff, you know what I mean?
From the lack of shampoo.
And hello, well, you said it.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, YouTubers, I take nothing from them, because there is definitely a need and a market for, you know, brand ambassadors and YouTubers and all of those things. But, you know, I think that it is also a need for both. You know, there should be a happy medium. There should be a balance of both a professional and a YouTuber. A lot of times, YouTubers are just one-dimensional because they've only experienced their own hair.
Right.
And so, and that's okay. That's perfectly fine. They can definitely tell you how to master whatever hair type they have. They can share their experience with you. But in having a professional, they can actually hands-on touch your hair, feel your hair, and tell you exactly what it is that you need. So I think that there is a need for both.
Well, and you know, and what I've, you know, just seen and looking is that even the YouTubers go to the salon,
you know. Absolutely.
Right. And you
know, I have YouTubers who come to me.
Right.
So but of course they never, I mean, some of them do, they may frequent or post their salon visit, but some of them may not.
Right.
You know, and so you just have to be careful.
Right.
Now, the other direction I want to go in that is more general, we've taken notice of how well you use social media for your branding and how you are able to create a consistent brand. And I think part of the work that I do is trying to help people with their branding as well. And one thing that I find lacking in people is being consistent in it.
Right.
Can you speak to how you use your social media without giving away too much of your secrets or whatever, if you have any, to keep yourself consistent?
One thing with social media and even with just the generation that we're in, people are visual. And so I always try to tell other stylists and people that I mentor in business that you should utilize social media just for that. Create a visual so people can see your business. And so creating those visuals, it gives people insight about your business. So I typically just use my platforms just for that, just to be kind of depict. That way a person can just look at my social media and automatically know, okay, she's about this. I noticed that in my following, because I am consistently catering to special to natural hair. Mm-hmm. If by chance, because I do have maybe about 10% relaxed clients, if by chance I do a relaxed style and post it on social media, I get no love. So you kind of have to pay attention to your audience and what they like and what they don't like, and whatever, you know, they like the most, that's what you post, and that's how you build your brand and get more engagement. So give the people what they need, or the people what they like to see, and just kind of feed that need.
Well, even in all of that you were saying about specifically your styling business, you also use social media and the internet to platform other areas of interest. And I think you kind of style yourself the way I style myself, as a Renaissance person, a Renaissance woman.
Right.
And yeah. Can you talk a little bit about Gluten-Free Diva and how that came about?
About my personal brand?
Yes.
Okay. So just recently, maybe within the last year or so, I launched Simply Marquita, which is my personal brand. So just going through through the years, I'm known for hair. This is what I'm known for. But there's so many facets to me. There's so many levels to me. I love art. I love cooking. I do ministry. It's so many different levels to me. And so I decided that I wanted to come from behind just hair and be able to utilize all of the skills that God has blessed me with, and to just kind of chronicle them online. So that's how the personal brand came along, was to just be able to utilize. I said coming into this year, I was going to utilize every gift that God gave me, mm-hmm. and every passion that I have. And so I just jumped into it, just doing that. So I have, my blog, my food blog, my, of course, hair will always be attached, ministry. I just wanted to put it all under one umbrella so people can get to know the person. Because a lot of times people don't know who I am. Mm-hmm. You know, they just know styles. They may just know Touch of Heaven Salon or whatever the case may be. So I wanted to be able to give them insight into the actual person behind all of those things. So that's how that came about.
And when I tell y'all the recipes that she has been posting, I had the privilege of tasting a few of them. Yeah, you might want to do yourself a favor. If you are a foodie, and follow Marquita for not just hair, but also for the cobblers and the wings in particular, because those were just absolutely amazing. The onion rings, my goodness. I'm a foodie.
So yesterday, I actually was just texting to my husband before we started. He was texting me because I jumped in the kitchen yesterday. I just had a taste for some peach cobbler. And so I jumped in the kitchen yesterday. No recipe, I just jumped in. And he texted me today, and he was like, I have no words to describe what I tasted yesterday. He's like, it was so good. And so, yeah, that's one thing I've been cooking. That's another thing I've been cooking since I was a kid. That was one of the chores. I was the only girl, so I had to cook for the whole house.
Oh, okay.
And so, that's something that I've enjoyed since I was young. So, yeah.
Well, you do a great job, and your creativity, even expressed through the recipes, is really amazing. I consider myself somewhat of a cook, and, the way that you use flavors and textures It's just really, really interesting. Very, very good. And it's good food at the end of the day. That's what matters, when it tastes good.
Thank you.
Yes.
I love feeding folks. I can cook and not eat. I can just cook. I know usually our neighbors and family love us because I can just cook and say, hey, come eat.
So thank you again for joining us today. If you could just tell us how people can get in contact with you or to follow your work online.
So I have like 6 Instagrams, but you can find me at Simply Marquita. And from there, you can find my other outlets. My website is simplymarquita.com. And yeah. From there, you can pretty much find all my other outlets. I have a gluten-free blog, which is Gluten-Free Southern Diva, Touch of Heaven Salon, my newest addition, my Studio 2911 Salon Gallery. And yeah, so catch me at one of those.
All right, well, thank you again.
Thank y'all so much for having me. This was nice.
Again, I'd like to thank Marquita for being our special guest and talking with us today. I really enjoyed the conversation. And make sure you follow her on all the social media by contacting her on simplymarquita.com. And you can find all of her information from there. And now I'm opening the doors of the church. As you know, every week we open the doors of the church for someone, something, or some situation that needs to come down and repent. And I'm opening up the doors of the church for Kip Anderson. That's right. I am calling him out by name, Kip Anderson. He is the producer and the filmmaker behind the phenomenon that is called What the Health. If you have Netflix, you've probably seen it on your Netflix feed. And they're trying to get you to watch this blasphemous information about the stuff that we are eating and the stuff that we should not be eating. And our son, our youngest son, has watched this since vacation, and now he's evangelizing the whole house, trying to get us to go against our goodwill and stop eating meat and be a part of this vegan agenda.
But he won't give up Taco Bell.
Sure won't. He was talking about the other night what we were going to eat, and he was asking, we going to eat some pizza. And that pizza got cheese and pepperoni and everything else that that show said that we're not supposed to eat. And I think that's from the devil.
Yes.
Church Folks and Kingdom Culture are the intellectual properties of Derek J. Murphy and Derek J. Murphy Enterprises. It is produced by Derek J. Murphy and Whitley Watson, assisted by Adrian Brown and our intern, Tyler Hollowell. Music provided by Chuck Price. Make sure to follow us on the web at derekjmurphy.com/churchfolksshow. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Church Folks Show. You can follow Whit on Facebook as Whit Rose or on Instagram as From Me_WhitLove. You can follow me at I Am Derek J. Murphy everywhere but Snapchat because I don't do that. Make sure to tell a friend about the show and spread our good news. And while you're at it, go ahead and subscribe for the podcast on iTunes, Google Music, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or you can visit us on our website. And make sure to give us a 5-star rating because that helps more than you think. So until next week, may the Lord watch between me and thee. Live album I purchased was, and did I buy it? It was Fred Hammond. Did I buy that?
We got it with our Fred Hammond tickets.
Oh, so yeah, I bought that. We bought that with the Fred Hammond ticket. And
he's also one of my favorites.
He's one of your favorites too?
I met him and I held his hand.
Yeah, I think we talked about that. I don't know how I would have handled that.
Yeah.
He's like one of my favorites.
It was a surreal moment.
Yeah.
Why are you acting?
Whatever.
Why are you acting? Now, as promised for our podcast listeners and subscribers,
Here's a little bit extra from Marquita Pruitt.
The only other thing I wanted to you just to touch on is I know for us, our marriage is a ministry. We try to operate in excellence in all areas, and our marriage is one of those as well. Just talk about kind of how you and your husband, Mr. Melvin, do that as well.
Let me start. First of all, I mean, I know I don't have time to share my whole testimony, but me and my husband met when I was 16. He was, I was 17. He was 19. And so we got married when I was 21. He was 23. And so, of course, at that age, being so young, people were like, y'all don't know what y'all are doing. And granted, we did not. But through that and just, you know, I do believe that God ordained him as my husband, but we kind of went about it differently. We were young and kind of did it our way. And so through that, we went through a lot of growing pains and we dealt with a lot of things. We shared that recently in our blog, our marriage blog. And so we shared, that we went through, we dealt with infidelity, and I now deal with infertility and just different things like that. And so we use our marriage and those things that we've gone through in our marriage to kind of edify other people and let them know that it's not the end of the road just because you go through something. Everybody, you know, what God showed me through everything is that not only was he my husband, he was also my brother in Christ. And so because he was my brother in Christ, I had to extend that same grace that was extended to me to him. I was wounded, as his wife. But he's my brother at the same time. So we pretty much try to use that to just kind of uplift and encourage other people in marriage. And it's not really intentional. At the end of the day, I always tell him he's like my best friend. He's my road dog. Everybody see, my mom used to say, oh, my God, y'all are glued at the hip. And we've been like that since we met. So it's not really intentional. We don't see what other people see. Everybody always tell us how good we are together, but we are genuinely friends. And that friendship is what saved us through everything that we've been through. So we just are just really genuine to each other and genuine to the covenant of marriage. And through that, I guess it's just a blessing to other people. Like I said, it's not something that we intentionally think about. We are just our true selves with each other, and it just seems to bless other people.
I love how you two really support one another, and how in many ways your gifts are complementary to each other.
Yeah,
and, mm-hmm. and y'all make that work. I like to say that Angela and I do the same thing with our giftings.
Yes, we do.
That was rude.
Whatever.
That was
rude. She couldn't see me.
Yes, she did. I like to think that we do the same thing, that we're complementary in our gifting and we try to support each other in what we do. And even though I'm more of a creative than she is, I think we balance each other very, very well. How is it... I don't know if Melvin considers himself a creative. How is it two creative people being in the same space together, especially in marriage?
So it's really funny, which is why I say that I really do believe that he was ordained to be my husband and I his wife, because where I find myself to be I think I'm a very creative person, but in areas where I may lack, Melvin is strong and vice versa. So, it really doesn't clash because we perfectly complement each other, if that makes sense.
Right.
So, like where I'm creative on a bigger scale, like I like big things and being messy in that regard, Melvin is more meticulous and likes to be creative with small things, which really blows, like it just aggravates me to deal with little details. So we just kind of complement each other. Where I'm weak, he's strong, and vice versa. So it just kind of flows. It just kind of works.
Well, see, the way it works for us, I'm more the creative macro creative, and she's more of the macro logistics. So whereas I can have a vision, but I don't necessarily see how to get it done. And she might get on my last nerve asking questions, but the questions are needed at the end of the day. I need her to ask those questions because I might not be able to execute it the way that I saw it to get the same result that I envisioned. And I think that being complimentary, you don't really figure that out fast. That comes through time, trial and error. And I think that we are those of us who have found people to share our lives with, especially in that manner, have been really, really and truly blessed for the most part, despite of how my wife is looking at me at the moment.
Whatever.
But it's true because, and I think the way it comes about as being complimentary is that you accept that person for exactly who they are, and you don't try to change who they are. You just try to, I guess, allow them to flow in the person that they are, and allow and find out how that it works in your life. Does that make sense? I hope I made that connect. It's just you're taking that person for exactly who they are, and you don't try to spin it. I think too many people get together and want to change the person as opposed to just allowing them to be who they are. And so it just kind of works complimentary when you can find where that person fits in your life. Does that make sense?
Does it happen like that? Yes, that does make sense. And I think the way you described it, it makes two individual people take on an identity together.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you're not losing the individual identities, but when you're able to be free and freely yourself, you create a perfect identity between the two of you. Would you say?
Right. Like, I always say it as a teammate. Like, you're teammates. You're on the same team. You know, you may have a kicker and you may have a thrower. You know, you may have someone who's strong in tackling or somebody good in kicking field goals. But collectively together, you win.
Right. And you win.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right.